This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from Jamaica. And in particular, the Hyatt Ziva and Zilara Rose Hall. Now, here we are in Jamaica, and I used to come to this hotel when it was the Ritz, and I have a story to tell because I've been coming to Jamaica for about 35 years, and there was a time when I used to eat a lot of meat. And when I came to Jamaica, I would always go to this one place where you couldn't get out without eating everything in the joint, and of course, the hot sauce and the red stripe beer, and called Scotchies. I still have my Scotchies hat. And I remember one night staying here at the Ritz, and they wanted to do a big dinner for me, and about 10 of our friends who were here working on stories. And I got a little conspiratorial, and I said to the F&B manager, I said, look, do me a favor. Just loan me a car. Don't order anything on the menu. Just come with me. We went to Scotchies and ordered out and brought it back to the Ritz-Carlton, and you saw the entire dining room shift. It went from, like, what was on the menu to our table. We were, like, feeding the rest of the dining room. It's an amazing place, still out there. And then, now that the Hyatt's here, they got smart. What did they do? They went and stole the guy from Scotchies. They brought him here. He is now the Jerk Chef. And his name? Ovin Morrison. How are you, man?
Oh, pleased to meet you, sir.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you. Even though I'm not a meat eater anymore, I got to tell you, your legend precedes you.
Oh, and you'll never go back to Scotchies after having my chicken, right?
Well, if you were at Scotchies, I'd be going back.
Oh, okay.
But you're here.
No, Scotchies were number one. No, Scotchies is way down the line, maybe number three.
Oh, stop.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Okay, but wait a minute. When I used to go to Scotchies, right, first of all, it's smoked. I mean, you walk in that, smoke was everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You had that old aluminum corrugated metal, right? And it was all done by wood, right? Still done that way, right?
Still done that way.
And you're still doing it that way.
I still do that way, but I do the fire cold. I don't do the wood no more. I do it in a unique space with a jerk pan, so I can steam roast my chicken.
And before you put it on the fire?
Before I put it on the fire, I steam it just for a while.
See,
short while.
That's the key to great barbecue anywhere. What I do, okay, here's my great, even though I don't eat meat anymore, I still have to cook it for all my friends. So what I do is I just put it into an oven at like 250 degrees for like 10 minutes, then I flip it, and then that's when I throw it on the barbecue, so it doesn't overcook on the outside.
That's where the moist stay in.
Yeah, see? Yeah, so, like, we're like cool guys together.
Cool, I mean,
we got it.
Yeah, so there's so much experience for me in the jerks business. It's like 29 years.
So basically, you're an expert jerk.
Expert jerk. So when I came to Scotchies, I was jerking before Scotchies. So I tried to bring it there.
See, you're giving me lines I can't even touch on radio. You know that. Okay. But let's move on, though. Let's get down to a definition of jerk in terms of the food.
A definition of jerk is like, you know, normally every jerk center have to have a little spice. Spice is...
Hold it. A little spice? I remember going to Scotchies with your then Prime Minister, P.J. Patterson, who, when I wasn't looking, got the sauce and covered it, right? And there was not enough red stripe beer for me to put out that fire.
But what I do at Hyatt, I do my spice in stages, right? I got level one, which is ketchup. Everybody use. That's no spice for all. That's for kids.
That's for wimps. That's for kids. That's wimps.
That's for kids.
Okay, fine.
No, I have my jerk sauce was originally made by me. Only way you find that jerk sauce is from Hyatt.
Okay.
Now we have a hot and spicy sauce. That's a scotch bonnet straight.
Boy, when they say hot and spicy in Jamaica, I'm already calling the fire department.
Oh, when they say hot and spicy, I mean it releases your sinus.
It basically creates new orifices in your body.
I'm telling you. Yeah, it make your white turn to blue. Yeah, that's all the...
Oven, stay with me, because we have more things to discuss here, okay?
Thank you.
That's Oven Morrison, the head jerk chef here at the Hyatt, formerly of Scotchies. I don't know about this hot sauce. We got to talk about this. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Hyatt Zilara and the Hyatt Ziva here in Jamaica when we return. Right
here. There you go. Keep that going. This is Flight 372 on SWA. The flight attendants on board serving you today. Teresa in the middle. David in the back. My name is David, and I'm here to tell you that shortly after takeoff, first things first, there's soft drinks and coffee to quench your thirst. But if you want another kind of drink, then just holler. Alcoholic beverages will be $4. If a Monster energy drink is your plan, that'll be $3, and you get the whole can. We won't take your cash. You got to pay with plastic.
We're talking to Oven Morrison, the head jerk chef here at the Hyatt. All right, when we last left off, you were getting me up the scale of like a five-alarm fire here in terms of hot sauce. But did you put that hot sauce on every piece of jerk? I mean, because there's jerk chicken. Is there anything you can't do jerk? Is there jerk fish?
Everything can jerk. As long as you marinate, you do
strong. The key is in the marination.
The key is in the marination.
How long do you actually marinate for?
Well, for me, I marinate my chicken for like 24 hours. The day before, I use it.
Oh, see, yeah. So you just throw it on the fire.
No, you don't, because there wouldn't be no flavor.
Yeah.
So you marinate your chicken.
Okay, now, without revealing, you know, state secrets, what's in the marination?
Well, the marination consists of a lot of spices and herbs, especially.
Well, that's you know, you're sounding like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh.
Spices and herbs.
Yeah, the Scotch bonnet pepper.
Okay.
It's a major.
How much are you putting in that thing?
Well, it all depends on how chicken you're going to cook.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because if I'm going to use a 100-pound of chicken, which I do like more than that for the day, I do like a pound of Scotch bonnet pepper.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then pimento.
Right.
Nutmeg. Soy sauce. A lot more.
Any honey?
No, honey. No, my chicken. No honey, my chicken.
No.
Maybe a little the sauce.
Okay.
Might have a little honey.
Okay.
Yeah. But the sauces, different. We make our own sauce. I make my own sauce. Nowhere you go in the world and get my sauce if I'm not there.
I got it. Okay. All right, so now we got the marination under control, 24 hours ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long does it actually cook?
Well, I cook it like for 20 minutes in the oven. 20 minutes just to get a color.
And then you throw it.
Then I throw it on the grill.
Right.
And on the grill, it stays about 35 minutes for complete cooking. Slow cooking, not too high fire. That's where the moisture stays in.
Gotcha.
So anything you come in there, have my chicken, it got to be moist. Never dry.
So you got to say it the other way. It's got to be moist.
Did you like it? Because you're going to find it nowhere better. No place. Because
you're selling it. You're selling it. But wait, I got a question. Of all the jerk that you do, is that the most popular chicken?
That's the most popular chicken.
Right.
Yeah. Because the jerk pork. No. Have you ever had a jerk pork?
A long time ago, yeah.
Okay. You say you stop eating meat, right?
Yeah.
If you ever pass and try have my pork.
I'll go back to eating. Guess what?
Meat.
I'm not coming.
Well, please don't pass my jerk center.
I'm not going to do it. Okay. Now I got to ask you the one question I ask all the chefs. Take yourself outside the Hyatt, outside the jerk, right? When you're not here, where do you go eat that's not in the brochure, that's not in the guidebook that people need to know about? Place that you like to hang out at?
Place I like to hang out is like Pelican, yeah.
And what's at Pelican?
The Pelican is, they have a Jamaican menu, which is
right.
Curry goat.
Is this the bar, the Pelican bar that I know?
There's a Pelican in the bottom row.
Yeah.
It's called Pelican Grill.
Yeah.
They have a Jamaican menu also.
And what's on that Jamaican menu? What do you order there?
Well, I order the curry goat.
The curried goat.
The curried goat.
Okay, you lost me.
Yeah, spices and herbs. Very spicy.
Well, you know what? With enough spice, the curried goat tastes just like chicken.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it's hot.
Don't taste sometimes. It's always hot.
The curried goat?
Yeah, no?
No, sometimes you know, cook it mild and sometimes you cook it hot. It all depends because sometimes guests are going to go and have the curry goat, right?
Yes.
Kids going to have a taste.
Yeah.
So sometimes they make it hot and spicy. Sometimes.
But if you say to your kids, go have goat, they're going to look at you like you're nuts. They're going, Dad, can I have chicken fingers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because normally, for the person who have never had goat, it's very hard to make him start.
No kidding.
Yeah. Because when you say,
hold it. Once you have goat, you never go back?
You never go back. But you know.
I had to say it. I'm sorry.
Because normally, you know, people don't like heat. Think of goat, eating goat, right?
Right.
Yeah, because normally people raise goat and say, oh, this is my pet and stuff like that. But in Jamaica, we do.
So basically what you're saying is in Jamaica, the goats are very nervous.
When the goat sees us, the goats run. They're going to be chopped. Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you don't curry favor with the goats because they're about to become curried goats.
Curry goats.
I know. All right, so you go to Pelican. Is there another specialty dish there other than the curry goat?
Yeah, they have brown stew chicken. They do have jerk chicken in there, but when I have jerk chicken there, it's still not good as mine because I try jerk chicken all over, you know.
Okay, jerk chicken here, but if you really want to be adventurous, you go off campus, you go to Pelican, walk in there, act like a local and say, can I please have two orders of the curry goat?
Of the curry goat.
Yeah, as spicy as possible.
Spicy as possible.
I know.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Now I radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. You know, this is an amazing location where we are right here on the Caribbean. Formerly the Ritz-Carlton, now reopened as, a beautiful all-inclusive resort, sort of a first for the Hyatt folks, especially in this part of the world. And they truly are all-inclusive, which I kind of like. Lots of opportunities to do lots of things using this place as your hub. You don't necessarily always have to stay on campus. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but one of the things that we like to talk about on this show are opportunities to volunteer when you vacation. And one of those places happens to be right here in Jamaica. Not in Montego Bay, but in Ocho Rios. And that name of the place is called the Animal House. No, it's not a John Belushi sequel. It truly is a great shelter and a great caring organization for the dogs and cats of this country. And it goes back about 25 years to someone who's now going to join us, who figured it all out, realized there was a need, and decided to serve that need. And her name is Maureen Sheridan. Hello, Maureen.
Yes. Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. Hard to believe you started this 25 years ago.
Yeah, actually going on 30.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Long time. Well, long time.
Yes. And the thing is that people neglect. And we find this in many cases after natural disasters, so many displaced animals. But even without natural disasters, there are always displaced animals, and they need hope, and they need help. And that's what you guys are providing. But the best part about it is that if you come to Jamaica, you are more than willing to have people come and volunteer and help out.
Yeah, and adopt. We have a growing number of animals going overseas. Doctors, people who come here and they meet an animal and they fall in love and we ship them off.
Now, tell me the rules and regulations, because I remember in the Turks and Caicos, they have a wonderful program there they call them the pot cakes, which are the stray dogs. And they have a program there that if you adopt a dog through that program, they've worked with the airlines that will actually, get your dog basically all vaccinated, all certificated. And the airline will actually fly it back at no cost. It's a great deal. You're helping in that department, but people really need to get involved.
Yeah, they do. They do. We welcome volunteers anytime. We welcome visitors. We have a Facebook page, The Animal House Jamaica, which tells people about our work. Unfortunately, Jamaica has a dreadful stray animal population. And visitors are usually delighted to hear that we exist. And we do our best, one animal at a time. And I think things have improved, especially over the last 10 years. We're pushing spay and neuter of animals. We're pushing for more adoptions. We're a no-kill sanctuary. And we believe that the answer is not to kill the animals, but rather to find them homes.
At any given time, how many animals, more or less, are you taking care of?
We've always got about 200 plus in-house.
Wow. And how many tourists, actually, I'm sure you have a wonderful ratio of the number of tourists who visit to the number of animals that are suddenly adopted, right?
we've actually sent over 400 to different parts of the world.
Wow. And now, when the dog or cat gets to that location, do they have to eat jerk?
No jerk. No jerk. Not allowed. Too spicy.
I expect in Jamaica you'd find dog food that would say jerk and jerk byproducts.
they'll eat anything.
They will.
They will.
Is for people who want to come and volunteer, what will you actually have them do?
Well, most of all, we have them interact with our animals because they can never get enough attention. And with over 200, you can imagine we do have a small staff, but there aren't enough of us to give the animals the attention that they need. So we welcome volunteers to come and spend time with them, to bathe them, to groom them, basically to do anything that they want to do. We like our volunteers to be happy.
And you also have some needs. I mean, you need medications, you need collars, you need basic equipment for dogs and cats, maybe some treats. So if people are coming, you're not exactly going to turn those down if people will bring them.
Oh, no, not at all. No, supplies are always welcome.
What's the biggest surprise that you have in operating this for so many years?
The biggest surprise, that's really hard to say. I think the biggest surprise is that we get far more help from overseas people than we do from local people. We get more volunteers from overseas. We get more adoptions from overseas. We get more supplies from overseas. We get more funding from overseas. I think that was the biggest surprise. We do get help here, specifically from a couple of hotel chains and a couple of very kind individuals, but by and large, our major help comes from Europe, comes from the USA and Canada.
And the good news from a medical perspective is that Jamaica is rabies-free, so adoption is relatively easy if you want to take the dog or cat out of Jamaica.
Yes, it is. There's no quarantine in either the US or Canada.
So what you're telling me is that when Jesse, my producer, who has already announced to me that she's coming to visit you and volunteer for a week, I have a sneaking suspicion that when she leaves Jamaica, she's taking somebody with her.
Oh, I hope so. She's very welcome.
Does she have a choice?
She always has a choice. But
yeah,
we'll
but
pressure
what's going to. There you go. I knew that was going to happen. Give us the website again. The website is theanimalhousejamaica.org. Yep.
Theanimalhousejamaica.org.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
My next guests are always fun to have on the show because they're an industry. They've got a series of cookbooks, TV programs, they've got a web series, they have a blog. I think they're probably selling clothing too. I have no idea how many things they're into, except I do know they founded something called Two Sisters and a Meal, and that's exactly who we have on the show today. We've got Suzanne and Mishy. Hey guys,
Hi.
How are you?
Hi there, Peter.
Nice to talk to you again, because every time, unfortunately, you guys are not in Montego Bay with me tonight. Where are you tonight?
We are in Kingston, which is where we live.
I know, so I'm not
going to
eat.
Yes.
So I'm not going to eat with you. I'm very upset, but let's
well,
talk.
Well, you didn't give us enough notice. We would have come and had happily made our way if we had a little bit more notice.
I know.
I'm sorry about that.
I know. But I know that every time I see you guys, I'm going to eat real well. But what I really want you to talk about today is how you are defining a whole new brand of Jamaican cuisine, if you will.
Sure. You hit it first. Okay, well, I think that, what can I say? I don't know if it is so brand new. I think it's almost like a revisiting of certain aspects of the cuisine that have been lost, and bringing together flavors and techniques that are traditional Jamaican techniques, but also infusing just, you know, some more internationally recognized flavors as well into the food. But we really keep it very, very simple. And I think what we think about why, when we think of Caribbean food and certainly Jamaican food, is just the real simplicity of a really great home-cooked meal or street food or the kind of food that just brings, you know, a lot of emotions to the surface, that is comfort food that, you know, you have a lot of fond memories of. And I think that's what we've really tried to create. I mean, what would you add
All right,
to
so, So what would you call the most emotional comfort food you got? What's the most emotional comfort food in Jamaica?
God, a patty for me, for sure. A Jamaican patty, preferably with a cocoa bread and washed down with some ginger beer or D&G ginger beer or Ting or any other flavored Jamaican soft drink. For me, anyway. Michelle, you?
See,
I would agree.
So, but it has to have a Ting, huh?
Yeah, it must have a Ting or a ginger beer by D&G. I think the patty is our most common street food, the most go-to point for lunch, for school children, for working people, for business people, and I think it has completely been under-recognized and undervalued for just how unique and delicious and, you know, incredible an item it is.
Okay, then I have to ask the stupid question, what's in it?
Oh, well, I mean, nowadays you can get anything in a patty, to be honest. I mean, as you travel around and Jamaicans have spread out, the diaspora has expanded, and you have Jamaicans in the UK and the US, they have patties with all sorts of gourmet fillings, you know, from salt fish and salt cod to curry goat. But the traditional Jamaican patty is a beef filling, and it is absolutely delicious with a flaky sort of pastry crust. And piping hot, straight out of the oven, there's just nothing like it. Nowadays, they have vegetarian versions. They have chicken patties, lobster patties, shrimp patties. You can pretty much get anything encased in a pastry. So, but unlike a pot pie, it's sold in a brown paper bag, and it's a grab-and-go kind of thing that you walk with that you can eat in the car, on the road, wherever you are. It's really quite delectable.
So you just go on any stand and say, just give me a patty.
Yeah, we have patty stores across the island, and they're major franchises, and they are exported to the U.S. and the U.K. and Canada. And, you know, newer ones and more bespoke gourmet versions crop up, and people do their versions. But it's I think, a uniquely Jamaican thing that has made a very worldwide presence, if certainly in the diaspora communities outside of Jamaica and other Caribbean areas. So, you know, patties are everywhere, and everybody knows, and they call it the Jamaican beef patty. I mean, we in Jamaica just call it a patty.
I got it. So now, in your most recent cookbook, what would you say is your most surprising meal, your most surprising recipe?
I would say, for me, I think there's a slaw that we do, a coleslaw that we do, that's a vegan coleslaw with a coconut sesame dressing, and it has fresh tropical fruits in there. It has sweet and spicy jerked cashews. It has red cabbage, and just it's really more of a salad, and it's relatively hearty, and I think it's a kind of dish that people would not expect, I think, from us, but also wouldn't expect to be in the book in the area that it is. I think that's one of my favorite dishes in the book.
Now we're talking to Suzanne and Michelle Rousseau, the sisters, Susie Q, otherwise known as Suzanne, and I don't know how you got this name, Michi, Ice Queen?
Michi got the name Ice Queen Peter because she used to be very unkind and cold to all her gentlemen callers through high school and beyond. So instead of being gracious and friendly and flirtatious as some young women and girls, high school teenagers would have been, she would just slay them with her sword, left, right, and center. That's
okay,
so unfair.
Okay, I gotta ask the question. Is she still the Ice Queen?
I would say no.
No.
Whoa.
I think not. I'm not anymore.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger. Now ride, ride. I ride through the city backsides. I see the stars come out.
In the interest of full disclosure, I go back years in Jamaica before this was a Hyatt and when it was a Ritz-Carlton, and even a little bit before that, there was a legendary and still is a legendary golf course here called White Witch. And I remember, this goes back at least 15 years ago, and my next guest, I'm going to ask him to talk a little bit about it. Everybody used to tell me, wherever I went in Montego Bay, oh, you know, that golf course, man, it's haunted. There are ghosts in that golf course, and there's the legendary story of the White Witch. And I said, yeah, sure, fine, you know, ghost, please, forget it. But the stories kept on coming. And my next guest may know a little bit about that and the history of that White Witch course, because he's the golf pro and runs the joint. Keith Steen, how are you, sir?
I'm very well.
So is it haunted? Come on, the truth.
I would say it is, yeah.
How? And who? Who's doing it?
Well, the story is that the Rose Hall Great House was built in 1770 by a gentleman named John Palmer, and he deeded it to his grandson, or maybe great-grandson, in about 1820, and his name was John Rose Palmer. And he brought with him his wife, and her name was Annie Palmer. Now, I understand that she was born in England, and she grew up in Haiti. And her parents passed
away.
Well,
then that's haunted right there.
There you go, yeah, right. Peter, you know. So her parents passed away, and she was raised by her nanny, who was quite good with voodoo and that kind of thing.
So no one does voodoo like she do.
That's correct. So she makes her way to Jamaica, and she just caused havoc. She ended up killing her husband, John Palmer, and two others.
This is Annie.
This is Annie.
Wow.
The legend of Annie Palmer,
but,
yeah.
But the name White Witch...
She was the White Witch of Rose Hall.
Oh, there we go. Annie Palmer.
Correct.
Now I have to tell you my story.
Let's hear it.
15 years ago, we were shooting a piece for one of my television shows, and I called my producer to get a crew down here. I said, listen, I can't be there, but I want you to go shoot the golf course. It's called the White Witch. And legend has it, by the way, her name is Tammy Leader Fuller. This is an absolutely true story. I said, Tammy, the legend is it's haunted. She says, oh, you are so full of it. It is not haunted. All right, I'll go shoot it. I said, I'm telling you, Tabby, just check it out. So she comes down, and I call her on the first day. So did you shoot the White Witch golf? No. Are you kidding? I'm not going to shoot it. Tammy, you got to go shoot it, because I'm going to talk about this for Halloween on one of my shows, that the rumor is that it's haunted. She goes, you guys, second day. Tammy, did you shoot it? No, not yet. I'm, having jerk chicken. Stop it. Are you going out there or not? All right, finally on the last day, I force her, go out there and shoot it. Just shoot people playing golf, we can tell the story, blah, blah, blah. And I don't hear anything. There's no phone call from Tammy. I try to find her. She's not answering on her cell, she's not answering emails. And I call the hotel. Oh, she checked out early. Checked out early? Where is she? 3 hours later, I get a phone call from Tammy in Miami. She goes, you are nuts. This is crazy. I said, Tammy, why'd you leave early? She said, well, I did what you told me to do. I went out on the golf course. I got my camera guys out there. We were shooting it. And they kept on telling me it was haunted, just like you did. I said, you guys are crazy. It's not haunted. And I stepped into a trench and broke my ankle. She says, I'm never going back. It's haunted. So
okay, yeah.
You've heard stories like that before?
Sure, certainly. Yeah.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
So... And there's a golf course. It's the golf course. Mm-hmm. So what's the most haunted hole?
That's a good question. I might say maybe number 5.
Because?
Well, like when we first opened in 2000, our first director of golf, his name was Andrew Rogers. And
tell me he was killed.
No, the lore has it that what Annie would do is she would go out on her horse with a flowing white cape, and she would ride amongst the... the slaves at the time. And she did this right at dusk just to terrify everyone. And Andrew swears that right at dusk, twilight, he has seen this this Annie Palmer on a white horse, legless horse.
A legless horse?
Yeah, you can't see the legs.
Oh, yeah. Paint that picture for me.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so some people...
And numerous people have seen this.
So some people have been through the desert with a horse with no name. This is a horse with no legs.
There you go.
Okay. And where is this guy today?
I believe he works in China right now. Yeah. I think
he's been all over. He fled the island. He's gone.
He's gone, yeah.
So how long have you been at this course?
I've been here as well. I've been here since 99.
And have you seen the horse?
I have not.
Have you seen Annie?
I have not seen Annie.
You're still alive.
I've seen a lot of strange
things,
still, though, Peter.
Really?
A lot. So
on the golf course?
I'm telling you.
Give me the strangest thing you've seen.
Oh, goodness. I've seen equipment upside down in ravines.
Probably with Tammy.
Yeah. Like if you, it can happen. If you can think of it, even if you can't think of it, it's happened here.
So if you don't hit the hole in one, you could be in a hole in one.
That's correct. That is correct. Anything can happen.
Is it a challenging course?
It is very much. Yeah.
Despite Annie.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
My next guest has the distinction of being not just a master blender, but one of the few female, in fact, the world's first female master blender when it comes to rum. Her name is Joy Spence. Hey, Joy.
Hi, how are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing fine. So let's get down to a definition of terms, because I know you work for the guys at Appleton, and when I come to Jamaica, the two things I think about are dominoes and rum.
That's correct.
And, yep, and the two are not always exclusive. And they're mutually exclusive, I should say. What does a master blender do when it comes to rum?
A master blender is responsible for ensuring consistent quality for the existing blends, and also to create new blends. So overall, the master blender is responsible for the general quality of all our rums and developing new blends.
Now, when you talk about rum, you're talking about everything from orange peel to molasses to nutmeg, and geography does play a role, doesn't it?
Geography is very important, and Appleton Estate is located in the heart of Jamaica in the Nassau Valley, where we have a very unique microclimate, and this creates daily showers of rain at about 2:30 p.m. every afternoon, which is perfect for growing sugarcane, which is a starting process for making our rum.
Right, and if the sugarcane, and there are different varieties of sugarcane, right?
Yes, we have over 10 varieties of sugarcane, and these do have an impact on the taste and aroma profile of our rums.
So, for example, you talk about coffee, you're going to the Blue Mountains, but if you talk about rum, you want to be where the rain happens every day at 2:30.
That's right, to get perfect sugarcane.
Exactly. So, now, if I go to Barbados, that's a different kind of rum, isn't it?
They no longer grow sugarcane, so they actually import their molasses. Whereas we grow sugarcane, then we make sugar at our sugar factory, and the byproduct is molasses, which we now use in our process, but we manufacture our own molasses.
Now, when it's time to age this, you know, it's one thing to put wine in or even single malt scotch in oak barrels. You're using oak barrels as well, right?
That's correct. We use white American oak barrels.
Have you always used that?
Yes, we've always used white American oak barrels. And
why?
We use white American oak barrels because those barrels produce very rich vanilla notes in the rums and low tannins, which is what we're looking for in our final product.
Now, I remember going to Cuba years ago, and there's Havana Club, and they have the Havana Club Regular and the Havana Club Dark. And, of course, we always go for the dark. Is that, am I making a mistake?
Well, the premium gold rum category, that is the hottest category now in rums. And this is where we're going to have significant growth in the next 5 years. And the Appleton Estate range is in the premium gold rum category.
And is that darker?
The darker rums are what we call our confectionery rums or punch-type rums, which has a lot of caramel in it.
That's why I like it. Okay, now the secret's out. Okay, now I understand why I like the darker rum.
Yes.
It's got less of a kick to it, and it's sweeter.
Yes. But, of course,
gotcha.
The Appleton Estate range, we have several different expressions from Appleton Estate VX, which is great for cocktails, moving through to our luxury rum, Appleton Estate 21, which you will enjoy the same way as you would a fine cognac or a single malt, because it has beautiful vanilla, coffee, cocoa, hazelnut notes, and just round and smooth, perfect for sipping neat.
How much are you sipping every day? Tell me the truth.
Most of my tests are sensory. The most important facet that a master blender should have is good sensory skills, because we do more sensory tests than tasting during the day. So I do walk in a straight line home at the end of the day.
You mean there's no designated driver for you, Joy?
No, we drink responsibly.
Hey,
Is there a reason why Jamaica grows so much rum, I mean, produces so much rum? Is it because you're also growing the sugar cane?
Yes, because we're still big in sugar, and so we grow a lot of sugar cane. Of course, the byproduct is molasses, so this is why, you know, we produce a large amount of rum.
So basically, I have to come out there with you and tell everybody I'm just using my sensory area and not sip, right?
That's correct, and you'd be amazed of the different flavors that you can detect in our rums. Most people, when I take them through this exercise, they can't believe that rum can be so sophisticated and so rich in flavors.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.